Good morning. When we started on the book of Titus, I did a message on the importance of you, which you might not remember. So, and it was the importance that you have in others' lives and that they have in yours. And then we saw that in Paul's letters, how he's thankful, he's encouraging to those who work alongside of him. And at the end of his letters, he often sends greetings, talking about the greetings from those that are with him to those that he's writing to. So this morning, I'm going to look at one of the power and influence of you. So the point of the message is pretty similar, but it's focused on our influence on others. No man is an island unto himself. What we do affects others, whether it's good, bad, whether we do nothing, or whether we do a lot. It affects others. And I guess when we think of our actions affecting others, a lot of times we think of that on a negative side and think of sin and how our sin can affect others. And obviously that's true. When we mess up and we sin, it will affect others. And we know there's consequences for sin. Moses said in Numbers 32:23, "You have sinned against the Lord. Be sure your sin will find you out." So there's going to be consequences for what we do. And the reason the reason that it affects others, sin affects us, and then that in turn affects those around us. And some of those sins we think of, I guess we would probably call them kind of extreme, at least in our Christian viewpoint. So we know the damage done by alcoholism. It can destroy families and the lives of those that are close to the alcoholic. Adultery rips a family apart, and it affects many lives. Pornography not only hurts the user, but the family, especially the spouse, who typically suffers as much as the user, but they have a harder time finding support or help as they're often overlooked. Anger, abuse, verbal or physical, is harmful to all of those in the family. And again, those are some of the ones that we might sometimes consider a little bit more on the extreme side. But what about the sins that, you know, that nobody seems to know about? Those that we've kept hidden, and pornography can be one of those. there's several other ones that maybe somebody doesn't know about those. I would suggest that all sin, hidden or not hidden, will affect those around you. So even if you have your hidden sin that you think nobody is aware of, it still affects others. And the reason it affects others is because sin affects us. We know sin will destroy us. And when we focus on whatever that may be, lust, desire, when the tentacles of sin begin to wrap around you, you become self-absorbed, which in turn makes you unloving to those around you. You do not think or act in a Christ-like way in your interactions with others. So all sin affects others. If you think about it, you say, well, I didn't change that much. But if I wasn't tied down with this, where would I be otherwise? So if you're tied down and struggling with something, if you weren't struggling with it, and I'm saying if you're struggling with something, somebody else may not know it, you just know it in your heart. If somebody else is if you weren't struggling with that, where would you be spiritually and encouraging? How much more help would you be to those around you? So one of our problems, I think, with sin is we don't take spiritual things very seriously. And Y'all know I like to give challenging messages that step on your toes. And a lot of times because they step on my toes, so this is not directed at you. It's directed as much at me as we struggle a lot of times with some of these things. Our Western mindset is part of the problem. Our flesh is the other part. There was an article in the BBC in 2017. It was talking about how the East and the West think in profoundly different ways. And it kind of started there, but then they ended up tying a lot of other stuff into that so that certain ones in the East have some of the same thinking that we have in the West. Western societies tend to value personal success over group achievement, which in turn is also associated with the need for greater self-esteem and the pursuit of personal happiness. But this thirst for self-validation also manifests in overconfidence, with many experiments showing that they are likely to overestimate their abilities. When asked about their competence, for instance, 94% of American professors claimed they were better than average. And this guy, I'm not sure if I pronounced his name right, Nisbet, points out that Western philosophers emphasize freedom and independence, whereas Eastern traditions tend to focus on concepts of unity. And so you, I think with the independence that we kind of have, and one of the things they talked about was as we started moving westward back, after we purchased all the land out west, and we started going west, we started developing more of that individualistic thought process. And I think where some of that comes in is we are not only that independent when it comes to God, we're often the same way. I've got my rights, I've got this, and we have that mindset, and it's not helpful for us spiritually at all. In this independence and pursuit of happiness, in the 60s, we came up with the slogan, "If it feels good, do it." And some of y'all might remember that. I was a little... I was on the tail end of the 60s, okay? So, by the 70s, there's a song came out, Pat Boone's daughter, Debbie, who sang, "You Light Up My Life," which included the popular line, "It can't be wrong when it feels so right." So, that thought process is carried through all the way into till now. And so, we deal with some of that stuff. The other thing is our flesh. It's all about satisfying self, regardless of how it affects others. It's taking care of number one, no matter what. So, I mentioned earlier that we don't take spiritual things very seriously. And again, I said, this applies to me as much as it may apply to you. We don't take things very seriously. When it comes to sin, if we realize how bad sin was, we live in sin, we're comfortable with sin, we see it all around us, it's in our heart. If we could see it the way that God sees it, you know, we would just be abhorred by it. I mean, we would have, you know... But we, because we're in it, our focus is in it, our focus is on self, we continue to struggle with it. But we have the knowledge, and we know it, but it doesn't sink in. We know that one day we're going to give an account for our lives, how we lived. And we smugly think, well, I've trusted Christ. My sins have been forgiven. They're paid for. Failing to realize who we're standing before. They may be paid for, but it's not a light thing. And Hebrews says that it's an awful thing to fall into the hands of a living God. And as we've talked about, we know he is merciful and so forth, but there's still consequences to sin, and we forget oftentimes in our independent thinking and elevating ourselves higher than we should, we forget who we're coming before. First Timothy, we've been going through on Wednesday nights. He is the blessed and only sovereign. I skipped a verse. I urge you in the sight of God who gives life to all things. He's the creator of the universe. He gives you your very breath. Colossians tells us that he holds all things together. And then in 1 Timothy 6:15, he who is the blessed and only sovereign, the King of kings and Lord of lords, who alone has immortality, who dwells in unapproachable light, whom no one has ever seen or can see. For that to sink in, Joshua read from Hebrews this morning, as we go to Mount Sinai, and as God came down, he's still veiled, there's a cloud, but the people quaked in fear, and even Moses, who we know went up on the mountain, quaked in fear. And yet, we take things very lightly, not understanding the holiness and righteousness of God. We know it mentally, we know it, but does it really sink in and affect our lives? And to think of standing before him, we struggle on a bright day to stand in full sunshine and kind of even look up. If there's much reflection, just think of it if there's snow. And you have a bright day, we struggle. We can't stand that little bit of light. Yet when Christ spoke to Paul on his way to Damascus, Paul said that the light that came when the light from Christ was brighter than the noonday sun. And Timothy says he's unapproachable light. To grasp who we are coming before, who we are giving an account to. But our real problem isn't visualizing that. If we could visualize it, we would no longer live for self-indulgence and pleasure, but instead would be focused on being obedient to him, and our desire would be for him. So we might have trouble grasping those things in the frailty of our human minds, but the real problem is not wrapping our minds around it. The real problem is not living according to what we believe. We know it, we believe it, but we don't really live that way. And that's where the problem comes in. We have a tendency we have a tendency to do this with other things. So we believe it, we know something is coming and things are happening. We understand, which I'll get to here shortly, on sowing and reaping and so forth. But we have just a tendency to do that. Retirement. You know, I know it's coming. How much am I really planning for it? How much have I saved up for it? Insurance, having life insurance, just some of those things that, you know, death. We all know it. We know it's coming. But how many people, you might be one of them, we have the head knowledge of it. We can die at any time. Yet, we don't necessarily really believe that. Because we all expect to be here next week. None of you are saying, well, I'm not. Just give you a heads up, I might not be here. Sherry thinks she's going to die this weekend, so we might not make it back. We're going to ride a motorcycle. So she said, I said, I'm proud of you. You think you're going to die, and you're still going to go. Well, I'm being forced to. I said, no, you're not. No, you're not. But anyway, we don't truly think that, well, We know in our head, I might not be here next week. But do we really believe I won't be here next week? That it could happen. When it comes to death, how many people do you know don't have a will? There's no plan. There's no anything. Thankfully for us, when the kids were little, we had a door-to-door salesman came around. He was legit. And we ended up going, basically, he just got you to go to the place. So we set up a trust, you know, and we set up, what happens to your kids? And you with the little kids should think about that. Because they said, what if you both die? And this happened to people. Where are your kids going? You want the state to decide that? So we put in there where our kids are going. And if that plan failed, we had a second backup of where they were supposed to go and to stay. But we put that off. And the way that works is, yeah, I really need to do that. It's not really convenient today. Tomorrow it's not convenient, and you just never get around to it. So we do this a good bit. We don't take things as seriously as we should. We procrastinate. We put them off. And again, we don't take them seriously. But let me tell you somebody who does, and that's God. He takes it very seriously. The scripture tells us that he watches watches your life in detail. Psalm 139 tells us that he has created us and that his thoughts toward us are more than the sand. He knows every detail about us, and it's not that he just knows it. He's also watching to see how you will behave in certain situations, even though he already knows. Proverbs 24:12, if you say, behold, we did not know this, does not the one who weighs the heart perceive it? Does not he who keeps watch over your soul know it? Will he not repay man according to his work? And then, for the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he pondereth all his goings. Jeremiah 16:17, for mine eyes are upon all their ways, they are not hid from my face, neither is their iniquity hid from mine eyes. And then we quote Jeremiah 17 a good bit, verse 9, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked, who can know it? But verse 10 says, I, the Lord, search the heart, I test the conscience, even to give every man according to his ways and according to the fruit of his doings. The Lord is weighing out what we do. He ponders what we are doing, and he gives us the fruit according to what we are doing. In Galatians, Paul tells us, be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. And then he goes on, it's not just for unbelievers, because he's telling us as believers, let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them that are the household of faith. And that's Galatians 6:7-10. So salvation does not do away with the law of reaping and sowing. The Lord still gives each one of us, according to our ways, the fruit of our doings. Zig Ziglar said, life is an echo. What you send out comes back. What you sow, you reap. What you give, you get. What you see in others exists in you. A couple more. Your life is a result of the choices you have made. If you don't like your life, start making better choices. Most of the problems in life are because of two reasons. We act without thinking, or we keep thinking without acting. So, as we think about sin and how those things affect us and how we struggle with that, it also affects those around us and what we do. As I mentioned earlier, with some of those things that we see more obvious of how sin wrecks a person's life and wrecks those lives around them. But we have, the Lord has something much more for us. And as we think on the positive side of that, not just the negative, God has called us to a higher calling as believers. In Ephesians 5, 14 through 18, see then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Wherefore, be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. And be not drunk with wine, whereas in excess, but filled with the Spirit. We've gone over this before in when we went over Titus. Circumspect. Y'all use that all the time, right? We do actually use, it's actually two words. And we do use those. But circumspect is careful to consider all circumstances and possible consequences. Prudent. It's attentive to all the circumstances of a case or the probable consequences of an action. Cautious, prudent, wary. So are you walking circumspectly? Are you considering the consequences of your actions? And obviously, to some extent, we do. But a lot of the times, we aren't thinking that far ahead. We're focused on the here and the now. But your actions affect others. As we mentioned, some of the extreme examples. Some of those we think of being in unsaved people's lives, but it's also in believers' lives. Or there has been. And there's no telling how many Christians have fallen into sin and addiction and have driven their kids away from the Lord. You can hide a lot of things from us, from other people, but your kids, if we make excuses, we come up with things, we have, we justify it, but your kids live with you day in and day out, and they see right through it. And we can make those excuses, but they'll read you like a book. We're claiming to be a Christian, and they continually keep blowing it. They may very well drive them away from Christ. And why would they be any part of that? You think of somebody being abusive, somebody that's committed adultery that destroys the family. What happens to those kids? The drunk that's abusive and so forth. Any of those. It can be other things. Why would they? You claim to be Christ. You're saying this to others, but you're living a different lifestyle. What's going to happen with your kids? They don't want a part of that. And you, it'll be very difficult to get them back because of that. What you do and say reflects on Christ. You say you're a Christian, that means you're a Christ follower, one who imitates Christ. And we think of most people that we're around are like a thermometer. They pretty much reflect what the environment is. We should be a thermostat, which regulates the temperature of the environment. As Christians, we aren't to reflect the environment. We should be changing the environment by being like Christ, bringing Christ into it. In Corinthians, 2 Corinthians 4:7, he says, "We have this treasure, we have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the excellency of the power may be of God and not of us." And he's talking about the gospel. That's what's within us. When we live that out, that's affecting others also. So on that negative side, we see how sin in our lives can affect others. But on the positive side, we can see how living for Christ affects others. And when, there was an illustration I'm going to read. It's long. However, you might not remember anything else about the message, but you'll probably remember this. And the reason I say that is because when Alan graduated from high school, he was a year ahead of me. When he graduated, which it wasn't very long ago, right, Aaron? like 41 years ago, maybe. So anyway, when he graduated, I didn't go to his graduation, but Mom told me the story that the guy, given their encouragement or whatever it was, challenge, told him. Well, I still remember that story, not the whole thing. So I got to looking it up, and Zig Ziglar is the one, I think, who has given that story out. So I don't know if you know him. He's passed. He was on Dobson, Focus on Family a few times, motivational speaker, and did presentations for leadership and things like that. And so he gives this story. Mr. B called a meeting one day and told all his people, and I will tell you, there's various versions because he probably told it more than one time and then you get other people repeating it. It's slightly different, but this is the gist of it. Mr. B called a meeting one day and told all his people, I noticed some of you come to work late. Some leave early, and maybe this is my fault. Maybe I'm not set for you the example I should have been setting, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to start early, leave late, and provide you with the kind of leadership which will enable us to build the kind of company we need to have. We're going to be a giant in this industry. It was quite a little speech, and his intentions were good. A week later, Mr. B was at the country club having a long conversation with some friends. Forgot about the time, and all of a sudden he looked at his watch and said, oh my goodness, I should be at the office right now. He got up, left in a hurry, made a mad dash to his car. In a hurry, he burned rubber, leaving the parking lot, gets out on the highway, run about 90 miles an hour, and the long arm of the law reaches out and stops him. Now, Mr. B was already upset, so now he's furious. This is ridiculous. Here I am, a peaceful, tax-paying, law-abiding citizen, and what does this dude do? He comes and gives me a ticket instead of looking for criminals, robbers, and murders. Oh, he was upset. When he got back to the office, he was about an hour late and did what most managers have done since the beginning of time. Every time they get caught with their hands in the cookie jar, they always say, look yonder, so nobody looks at them. In a very loud voice, he called his sales manager and said, come over here, I want to talk to you about the Armstrong account. You've been fiddling with that thing for 6 weeks. You should have closed the sale a dozen times. Just come in and tell me, yes, you did, or no, you didn't get the deal done. He was really upset. So the sales manager quietly comes in, closes the door behind him, said, Mr. B, I'm sorry to tell you, I lost that deal. I thought I had it, but for some reason or another, I lost it. So if you think Mr. B was upset before, now he's really upset. He literally hit the ceiling saying, for 18 years, you've been my sales manager, and I've been relying on you to bring me new business, and now we have the biggest account ever, and you blew it. Well, let me tell you, friend, just because you've been here 18 years doesn't mean you have a lifetime contract. Now you're going to replace that business, or I'm going to replace you. So he was very upset. You think he was upset? Sales manager was very upset. So the sales manager goes out, and he storms out, slams the door behind him, thinking to himself, for 18 years I've been bringing business to this company. As a matter of fact, I'm the only one who brings in new business, and without me, this business would have gone down the tubes long ago. And now because I lose one lousy sale, he uses a cheap trick and threatens to fire me. This is ridiculous. He was very upset. He calls the secretary and said, those five letters I gave you this morning, did you get them out? Or are you going to give me some lousy excuse about having something else to do? She said, don't you remember? You told me that the Milton account took precedence over everything else. I've been busy working on that. He said, don't you give me lousy excuses. I told you I want these letters out today. If you can't get them out, I'm going to get somebody who can. He was very upset. But if you think he was upset, you should have seen that secretary. She stormed out of there, slams the door behind her, and thinks to herself, this is ridiculous. I'm the only one who does any work around here. I do more than three people on the payroll. I've been a secretary for 11 years, and if it wasn't for me, this company would have been broke years ago. And he threatens to fire me. Who does he think he's kidding anyhow? She was very upset. She went out to the switchboard operator and said, I've got five letters. I want you to get them out. I know that ordinarily you don't do this, but you don't do anything anyhow, besides occasionally answering telephone and getting out a little work when we need when needs to be. I want these letters out. I'm going to tell you right now, if you don't get them out, I'm going to get somebody who can. She was very upset. I think she was upset. The switchboard operator said, this is ridiculous. They don't do any work except drink coffee, talk on the telephone, every once in a while get a little work done. And whenever they get behind, they come out here, throw their extra work on my desk, expecting me to drop everything and do their work. I'm the only one who does any work around here, and they threaten to fire me. This is not fair. Oh, she was really upset. She got the letters out before leaving work. When she arrived home, first thing she saw was her 11-year-old boy on the floor watching TV, and the second thing she saw was a big rip across the school jacket. She said, son, how many times do I have to tell you to put your play clothes on as soon as you get home? Don't you think your mother has a hard time supporting you to go to school? Because you disobey me, you'll go to your room without dinner, and there'll be no TV for 3 weeks. Oh, she was really upset. Did you think she was upset? She would have seen a little boy. He hopped upstairs saying to himself, this is my own mother. It was an accident. They could have happened to anybody, and she doesn't even give me a chance to explain. Oh, he was upset. About this time, the cat walked in front of him, which was a big mistake. Little boy gives the cat a kick. He says, get out of here. You've probably been up to no good yourself. Now, if you think about it, this poor cat was about the only creature involved that could not have altered that series of events. And if you think about it another minute, wouldn't it have been better if Mr. B had just gone directly to the switchboard, left the country club, gone to the switchboard operator's house, and just kicked the cat himself? So we see those chain of events, and they happen to us all the time. Because something happens, we get upset, and in turn, what do? We pass it on. And if we are that thermometer, it continues to get passed on, and the cat gets kicked. So when you go in somewhere and you see something that somebody's upset, they're dealing with, you can now say, well, I wonder who kicked their cat. So you see, the truth of the matter is we live in a negative cat-kicking world. Sometimes you go for a cup of coffee, sit down, wait, wait, and wait, and finally say to the waitress, miss, could I have a cup of coffee? And she just jumps down your throat saying, can't you see I'm busy? I'll get to you as soon as I can. You don't have to bite my head off about it. So will you let her pull you down to her level? Or can you understand it has nothing to do with you? Somebody had stopped by and kicked her cat long before you got there. And another time, if you're stuck in traffic, traffic's in front of you, traffic's behind you, and somebody starts blowing the horn, it's not about you. Somebody kicked their cat. So we talked about that we have a treasure within us, and Paul was talking about the gospel. If you remember the account of Gideon, and more than likely it's what Paul was referring to, if you remember the account of Gideon and the Lord dwindles his army down, well, he's going to fight against Midian to deliver Israel from the Midianites. And it says that they are like the locusts. They are like the sand on the seashore. And the Lord dwindles his army down to 300 men. If you remember, they take lanterns and put them in pitchers, and they go to the army outside the camp of Midian, and at the right time, they blow their trumpets, and they break those pictures, and lights are everywhere all around them. They think that they are surrounded by a huge army, and they all begin to fight against each other and to flee. We are to be like those pitchers. When life happens, our pitcher gets cracked or broken, the light of Christ should come out. The glorious gospel within us should radiate out to the world around us. I talked about earlier, we don't take spiritual things seriously. When we begin to, I think one of the things that we kind of struggle with is we try to focus on one thing or the other. So if we're struggling with something, well, let me stop doing that. Well, the Lord tells us to stop doing that, but he always tells us to do something. So if we start doing something, and we start focusing on this, this other will begin to fall to the wayside. And as we realize how much that affects other people, we focus more on the Lord, we're going to reflect Christ more and more. So as we realize that what we do and what we say affects those around us, we need to be that encouraging word, that helping hand, that servant heart. We know that God designed each of us for a specific purpose. He placed us here in this slot of time to reach certain people that he brings along into your world. A lot of times, you know, we think, well, at least growing up, we wanted to live at a different time. We might still want to live at a different time. And maybe you're still trying to live in the good old days. Well, they weren't that good. The reason they were, you thought they were good is because you don't remember the hard times and you don't remember all the other stuff that was going on. And the other thing is you know what happened. We can look back. It was safe and secure because I know what happened. We didn't die. We didn't have this happen. We thought we were going to lose a house. We didn't lose a house. But now you're in a situation and you're looking and you don't know what's going to happen because we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So we can look back at something saying, oh, well, those were the good days. Well, then you go back and start reading history of all the things that was going on. I said, glad I wasn't back there. So if we focus on Christ, when we start focusing on that, to realize that he has placed us in a specific place in time for a purpose. You didn't just happen chance to be here. I don't know how many of y'all got in the creation moments. I encourage you to do that quite a bit. The enormous detail in creation is astounding. And there's no way any of it can hold up to evolution. But it's like there are so many little details that make things work. You know, down to the atoms and the molecules of how everything ties together. You didn't just happen to be here at this particular time because your dad and mom had you. That's not the way it worked. The Lord knew, he planned it, and he has a purpose for you. And as we focus on him, we will be more effective to those around us in encouraging and building them up. As Joshua was going through Ephesians, when he started, he read from Ephesians 4, till we all come to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, that we should no longer be children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men and the cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting, but speaking the truth in love, may grow up in all things into him who is the head, Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and knit together by what every joint supplies, according to the effective working by which every part does its share, causes growth of the body for the edifying of itself in love. So, as we think of who he may bring into our lives, on an everyday basis. Even our actions, we may not even say anything, but a lot of times our actions are enough that people see a difference in us and in our lives. But we also, those here in this local meeting, we are to build each other up, to encourage each other. And as we will begin looking at spiritual gifts probably next month, we see that the Lord has given you a specific gift to help build up and encourage and edify the church. So it's pretty weighty thinking of all the things that we do affect others, but it does. And obviously, we see that a lot more with our kids when they're younger. It's one of the things that you try to do everything that you can for them to help out, for them to understand the Lord, grow spiritually, and so forth. I mean, we didn't even, when we were riding when the kids were younger, it was pretty much all we listened to was kids songs, Christian kids songs. I know that drives some of y'all nuts. But the point was, it was, you know, their age singing about the Lord. We didn't listen. Sherry said, I didn't know what was playing on the radio at the time because we didn't keep up with that stuff. Well, that makes a difference. It's those little things that make the difference that we keep putting into their lives. It's the same thing with us. If I blow up and I call you a blithering idiot, you don't know what in the world you're doing, you're going to remember that for a long time. And it probably wouldn't make a whole lot of difference what you say after that, that you're not going to do away with the damage that was done from calling the person an idiot. On the other side, if you give somebody encouragement, you never know how much that's going to help them. You might not have thought of anything about it. Those guys looking at the other day, he was a young guy, and he was talking to his friend. This was in during COVID, so during lockdown. He was talking to his friend, and it was 2 o'clock. He was still in the bed. He's like, well, I wonder what I could do to kind of like encourage him. So he said, he was looking at something or another, and anyway, he said, it was about tacos. So he said, I'm going to order him some tacos. So he watched Uber, whatever it is that they took food to deliver the food to his house and everything, and they told him it was from him. And he said, the guy called, FaceTimed him, and he's talking to him because he's just in tears. And he said, you know, he goes, man, it was just tacos. It really wasn't that big a deal. He goes, no, you don't understand. He said, I had to shut my business down. I had to lay everybody off, and I think they were getting ready to lose their house or something else. We don't know if we got money for food, and you just sent something. So those, even if it's something small, you don't know how much it affects somebody else. And just that encouraging word, we don't always tell everybody what we're struggling with, but when we get that encouragement and somebody just shows some love, and you might not have been very nice because of what you're struggling with, and they in turn show you grace and mercy and show you some love, that sticks with you, and you'll remember it. 30 years, 40 years from now, you'll remember it. So, pretty much, you know, there's not a whole lot that we can do that will not affect somebody else. Even though we might try to live individual lives, we're still affecting somebody else by what we do. Good or bad, you know, it's still going to make a difference. And when somebody's kicked your cat, they'll treat the other person the way that they did in the story. We need to show them the love that we should and change that whole thing, because when we reflect Christ, it will change everything. Heavenly Father, we just thank you for your love for us. We just recognize or try to recognize who you are, the creator of the universe, the King of kings and Lord of lords, the one who has created us, that you have loved us. You have given us your Son And so he would become our substitute, pay the penalty for our sin, that we could be have a relationship with you. And we just thank you for that this morning. And we just realize that you've placed us here for a specific time, for a specific purpose. And we ask that we just turn our focus on you, that we would seek to honor you in all that we do, that we would put you first in our lives, and that we would seek to fulfill the purpose that you have placed us here for. And we just thank you for your love for us. In Jesus' name, amen.